Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're doing recording, actually, another in a series of programs from a very exciting venue. We're in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're at the ASI International Convention. It's 2014. We're recording in the month of August. We've got some great people here doing things, making a difference in the health of communities in Indian country and beyond. Across the table from me right now is Evelyn Kissinger. Evelyn, it is great to have you with us.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Evelyn, you have got some really remarkable credentials. You're an author, a speaker. Tell us a little bit about your professional training.
Yes, I'm a registered dietitian, and I've been self-employed in doing corporate wellness programs over the years, taught in a university, and now I work for Michigan Conference, and we have programs through Lifestyle Matters.
Okay, so you work with this group called Lifestyle Matters, and I know you folks are getting your materials out throughout the country and throughout the world, aren't
you?
Yes. Give us a feel in this segment of American Indian Living for some of the things that you've been excited to teach people about. What kind of things happen when you're in a community or when you're developing your materials where you start seeing those lights go on and people's lives are changed by health information?
Yeah, you know, our health is influenced by many parameters. So we're looking at creating a lifestyle, a healthy lifestyle in what we eat, what we drink, how much sleep we get, drinking enough water. So looking at lifestyle issues is really important when it comes to health, but also looking at our environment. We look at our internal environment, and this is the thoughts that we have that can dramatically affect our health. We may be eating lots of healthy things, but we're not thinking healthy thoughts. So creating a healthy environment internally and also creating a healthy environment externally. Mm. What's surrounding us that influences our choices? Mm-hmm. If you have M&Ms on your table at home, your hands are going to go in that and you're just going to eat them. But if you have a bowl of fruit sitting there, then you're more likely to make a better choice. Uh-huh. So our environment is very influential in our health. So it's to create a lifestyle, create an environment, internal environment, how we think, external environment, and what surrounds us. And the third is to create connections. Connections with other people, because we need the support of each other.
That's right.
We were wired to be together. And also creating a connection with God. So looking at these three parameters gives us a big picture of what does it mean to be healthy.
Okay, let me see if I've got the paradigm, kind of the overarching vision that you folks are working from. I'm first going to create a lifestyle, and that's going to involve creating an environment and then also creating connections.
Yes.
And all those pieces are going to help me be on a journey toward health instead of a journey toward illness.
Absolutely. So they're synergistic. They all work together. And to have, to look at the total wellness, physical, mental, spiritual, is what we're striving for. And we're all on a journey. And so what can I do to get to the next level of health?
And this is powerful because these concepts really resonate throughout Indian country. You know, we're talking about whole person health and connectedness. Evelyn, I just have to ask you this question. As I sit with patients and as I lecture, as I do radio program, interacting with people in various ways, you mentioned as an example something that seems like it's a huge problem in the population that I've dealt with, and that is this issue of sweets. Sugary foods. Is this as pervasive a problem as it seems from my vantage point?
Absolutely. The number one source of sugar in the American diet is soda.
Wow.
And I don't think that people realize just how much sugar they're consuming when they drink soda. our body needs carbohydrates or energy foods.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if we don't get enough of the energy foods from whole foods like fruits and vegetables and whole grains and beans, then we're naturally going to crave something that goes into the system really fast, these instant carbohydrates, these sugar foods.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we're driven toward those sugar foods because we're not getting enough of the good stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But we can also get into the habit of just, you know, picking up a soda here and there and not realizing the contribution of sugar in the diet. In front of me, I have a soda. And it's a 1 liter soda. This is 4 cups of soda.
Right.
And it's considered as a serving.
No.
For, you know, people go in to the gas station and they'll buy one of these and drink the whole thing and not think anything about it. But if you look on the label, you will see that there is a teaspoon of sugar for every ounce on there. So reading on the label of this soda, how many grams of sugar do you see there?
Okay, well, it says it's got 3 servings.
It's 3 servings, but in 1 serving, you have 46 grams of sugar. Well, 1 teaspoon of sugar has 4 grams in it. Now, you have to do a little bit of math here, so you have to think about it.
Okay.
But 46 divided by 4, you're going to have 11 and a half teaspoons of sugar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that's just for 1 serving.
And that's a 12-ounce serving, right? So just like you said, it's about 1 teaspoon per ounce.
Per ounce.
Well, how can you do that? How can you get a teaspoon of sugar into an ounce
of fluid? It doesn't seem like that there's that much in it if you were to drink it.
Uh-huh.
But if you read the label and you see that you're supposed to be sharing this with at least 2 other people, but that's not happening. This is 3 servings.
Wow.
And the recommendation that has been made through the Heart Association and other organizations is that we should limit sugar to 25 to 35 grams for the whole day.
No, wait a minute, Evelyn. You just showed me something here. 46 grams in 1 serving, but there's 3 servings. There's nearly 150 grams in this moderate-sized bottle.
That's right. That's right.
So this is you're telling me this is enough for a whole week?
That's right. 25 to 35 grams a day is recommended, and in 1 serving...
Wow.
There's almost twice as much that is recommended for the whole day.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got 3 servings in there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, so we've always known that, you know, sugar's bad for your teeth.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
we learned that way back when. But it's also just as detrimental to the body because it affects the immune system, for one.
Okay.
But a big deal is how it affects the brain. It affects our learning and memory as well. And it causes these this high rise of blood sugar in the brain and then high insulin levels. And it can even cause the death of brain cells in high amounts.
Wow. So let's talk to someone who's tuning in right now. Let's say they're on the reservation. They've been living on the res for quite a while. And maybe they've come on hard times. Maybe they lost their job. Maybe they've had an injury. And they're relaxing around the house. It's hot. They're thirsty, and they grab one of these soft drink sodas. What's that going to do as they're sitting there drinking this? I mean, are you saying it's actually going to affect their mental performance?
It's going to affect their mind, body, physically, and mentally.
Wow.
For, you know, we get used, we have habits,
and
we have taste buds.
Right.
And so we get used to this high level of sugar, and we wonder, and so you get accustomed to this sweet taste, and so that's what you start to desire. We like what we eat. We like what we drink.
Mm-hmm.
I was a teacher in a university that had students from all over the world.
Okay.
They would come to our class, and they would say, "The food in America is too sweet. It's too salty. Mm. It's too greasy." But you give them a few weeks, and pretty soon they start liking the sugar and fat and whatever. So we get accustomed to this. So, and it's a gradual, we just kind of, well, we have 1 pop a day. Then we have 2 pops a day, and then we have 3. And pretty soon we're not even drinking any water. Well, water just doesn't cut it anymore because I'm used to this super sweet sensation. Mm-hmm. And it grabs hold of me. And pretty soon I'm almost, you know, I don't really have the freedom to choose because I'm being drawn to this sugar because it can be very habit forming. But there is a solution.
Tell us.
Yes, we can overcome this draw. We have marketing. We have people who are spending a lot of money trying to get us to eat and drink things that aren't so healthy for us.
No question.
But we want to be in charge of our choices.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can be a gradual change. So between each soda, I drink water. I say, okay, before I have another soda, I'm going to drink some water.
So you're not telling us about your habit.
No, I'm saying if a person's trying to overcome
this
addiction to or this habit forming, I'm drinking a lot of soda.
Mm-hmm.
There's one way to do it in saying, okay, I'm just going to slack off.
Okay.
And I'm just going to limit so much a day.
So I don't get another drink of soda until I've had a glass of water.
That's right. And so that's one thing you can do. The other is you can just say, I'm just cutting this out. And I'm just going to go cold turkey.
Okay.
But if I've been consuming quite a bit of this, I'm going to feel it for a couple of days, especially if it has the caffeine kicker in it.
Right.
Which this one does.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to feel it. But just knowing that if I just hang in there and I keep drinking the water and I start eating high fiber foods, natural foods, more fruits, more vegetables, I can kick that sugar habit. And after doing that, I'm going to have more energy. I'm going to feel more vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
My brain's going to work more efficiently. And it's just, I'm going to feel better physically and mentally as well.
If someone is out of work drinking this and they're trying to get back into the job market, maybe part of what's making it difficult to find another job is they just don't have the motivation because they're drinking so much of this?
Well,
is that a stretch?
Sometimes that sugar can make you feel like just laying on the couch a little bit longer.
Mm.
You know, it gives you that high for a few minutes.
Uh-huh.
But then it just brings you right down.
Okay.
And you go, I need another fix. But the solution to the being hooked on sugar is to go for the foods that give you the best energy. And that's the natural foods. The foods like you're going to recognize that comes out of a garden or grows on a tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fruits, the vegetables, and some good whole grains. Starting out your morning with a good breakfast. After we slept all night.
Okay.
And, you know, we wake up in the morning feeding our body and our brain with foods that are natural. And they give that energy to your body and brain for the next 4 to 6 hours. It's going to help with mood, memory, learning, and even our behavior. How we act can be reflected in some of the fuel, the food that we feed to our body.
So you're talking about these natural foods, Evelyn. I've heard you talk about the fruits and the vegetables, the whole grains. Many people in Indian country would say, well, there's another category of natural foods you didn't mention, you know, the wild game, the fish. Is that similar in the beneficial effects?
Well, the first step is to add more of the good stuff.
Okay.
You know, we just want to add more of the fruits, the vegetables, the whole grains. That is the category that we really want to give a good focus to.
Okay, so it's the natural plant foods.
Yes.
And if you're using some of the wild game, you're not worried about that right now. You just say eat more of the fruits, more of the vegetables, more of the whole grains.
That's right. So starting your day off with some good whole grain cereals.
Mm-hmm. And what would that look like if someone's...
Well, you know, a lot of people like to have cold cereals, you know.
Okay.
And if you're eating something that comes from a box... A good thing to look for is dietary fiber.
Okay.
You find it on the label, and you want it to have at least 3 to 5 grams of fiber. Just look to see if it's got some fiber in it.
Okay.
And there's a lot of cereals out there that are actually targeted toward children that aren't great sources of fiber.
Mm.
And our kids need good source of fiber for good energy.
Okay, we got to talk more about this.
Okay.
Evelyn, you're a wealth of information. You've helped a lot of people change their lifestyle and their diet. And you, if you're tuning into American Indian Living today, you want to get this information. It's going to help you, your family, your tribe. Stay tuned. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Evelyn Kissinger, registered dietitian, will be back with more in our next segment of American Indian Living. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is the story of Daniel, who was born 2 months early. He weighed 1 pound, 7 ounces. His lungs weren't ready. His heart wasn't ready. His brain wasn't ready. At the hospital, the nurses said Daniel was a fighter, and they would do all they could to help him. The doctor said even with the best care, Daniel may never walk. He may never see. He may never learn. Daniel's parents spent night after night at the hospital, watching his every breath, holding his tiny hands, and looking for signs that he was growing stronger. At home, his parents looked around Daniel's empty nursery, at the quiet toys and the still rocker, and they hoped that one day they could sit in that rocking chair and tell this story to their very healthy son. Daniel's is just one of the more than 500,000 stories of babies born prematurely last year. But there's hope for a happy ending. The March of Dimes is funding the research and programs to stop premature birth. You can help bring more babies home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.com. Working together for stronger, healthier babies.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. Dr. David DeRose in the Convention Center in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're speaking in August of 2014. That's when this show is being recorded. And I'm talking with Evelyn Kissinger. She's a registered dietitian. She's a member of the team Lifestyle Matters. And Evelyn, you and your team have been making a difference throughout the world, haven't you?
Yes, we are having a great success in sharing materials that help change people's lives for good.
It's exciting. I've seen many of your materials. I've used them in some of my own community health efforts, and I've been so thankful that you and Vicki Griffin and others have been devoted to this task and sharing what you've been doing.
Great.
Well, let's come back to our topic of discussion. We've been talking about this problem that we have, and it's throughout Indian country. It's throughout the Western world for sure. It's this problem of heavy sugar consumption. You were telling us if we want to go with a breakfast food in the morning, one of the things I want to be looking at, as you've illustrated here, those of you that are not in the exhibit hall can't see that Evelyn brought a cereal box, or at least part of one, with the nutrition information. And I'm looking here at the fiber. Wow, 6 grams of fiber in this.
So that's a pretty good choice. If you have 6 grams of fiber in your cereal, and looking at the label, you want to look at the top part of the label where it says dietary fiber.
Okay.
At the bottom, it tells you the amount that is recommended. But we think that a healthy diet has at least 25 to 50 grams of fiber for the day.
Uh-huh.
And so we want a good, healthy, at least 10 grams of fiber for breakfast.
Okay.
And the reason we want good fiber for breakfast mm-hmm. is because when you have the dietary fiber and you're eating natural foods, fruits and vegetables and whole grains, then it gives a natural delivery of energy to your body and your brain mm-hmm. for the next 4 to 6 hours. And that helps children learn better. Mm. It helps with behavior. It helps if you're working in your office. There was a group of executives I did a wellness program for, okay. and they said, we're more productive because we're doing this. So this is a brain thing to have a good breakfast that's good in natural foods and good fiber. So when you're choosing a cereal, choosing one that has at least 3 to 6 grams of fiber per serving and some berries.
Okay.
Berries are excellent with fiber, any kind of berries, blueberries, strawberries, and they can be frozen.
Okay.
You know, if you don't have access to fresh. And then a handful of nuts.
Okay.
Walnuts, almonds, any kind of nuts. You know, there's been a study that a handful of nuts a day can cut your risk of heart disease by 50%. That is pretty amazing.
Wow, 50%.
50% just by eating a handful of nuts a day. And so if you have that with your cereal in the morning, you're going to be off to a good start for your body and your brain.
Okay, well, that's a powerful message. So really, if I'm looking to optimize my mental performance, whether I'm a student, whether I'm an elder, whether I'm a tribal council member, regardless, I'm going to perform better if I ramp up my intake of these whole plant foods that are loaded with fiber.
Yeah, it sounds so simple, but it's profound. It's amazing the benefit to your body and your brain when you are eating foods like they come in nature. When you've got whole grains, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and beans.
Okay.
You know, those foods are powerful foods, and they affect our mood, our memory, our learning, how well we learn, and even our behavior.
So what I hear you saying, Evelyn, is there's real cutting-edge nutritional wisdom in the wisdom of the elders in Indian country.
Absolutely.
Eating the corn.
Yes.
The beans.
You can't get better.
Okay.
If you were to eat those three foods on a regular basis, it is a powerful way to help you feel strong and healthy and our mood and our behavior. I mean, it's just really profound how powerful it is to fill our body with the fuel that it was designed to have. And we live in an environment where we have so much marketing toward fast food and sugar foods and high-fat foods. And we are sucked in to purchasing and consuming these products. But in our best interest, it's best to stay simple. And usually these foods are more economical and can be very tasty and enjoyable.
You know, what's so fascinating to me as we speak about all this, we touched on the subject of wild game, and I was glad at the break we were talking some about this, and you made it very clear. You don't have a burden to say people can't eat any wild game. But the point is, if we look at the fiber in those animal products, whether
there's
it's...
There's none.
Yeah, there's zero, isn't there?
There's none.
Why it's so amazing to me, Evelyn, is when I travel, sometimes I'll inquire about whether there's a breakfast included at the hotel. And it's interesting to me that many places where I travel, they'll say things like, we have a wonderful breakfast. And what they mean by a wonderful breakfast is they've got lots of meat down there, but not much in the way of fruits. Do you find that same problem?
That's true. And if you find cereal, it's often the refined cereals. Sometimes they'll have waffles, but it's made from the refined white flour. But tanking up on good fiber foods in the morning can help keep your appetite satisfied.
Okay.
For the rest of the day. I mean, it sets the pattern so that you're not getting into those cravings for sodas and candy bars and snacks. People who don't eat a good breakfast, they are trying to catch up later. And so they find that they're in the afternoon, you know, they've got this attack for a candy bar.
Right.
Or maybe it turns into that, you know, I've been good all day, and then I start supper, and I can't stop. I start eating, and then I eat more and more. I sit in front of the TV, and then I eat more and more. And it's just this pattern that develops, and then wake up in the morning, well, I don't feel hungry. Well, the person has just eaten from 5 o'clock until 11 o'clock and then wonder why they might not be hungry in the morning. But to change the pattern is to make a decision and to say, okay, I'm going to get up, and I'm going to have a good breakfast. Okay. And a person may not absolutely enjoy that the first time, but after you get in the habit of giving your body what it needs first thing in the morning, you see the benefit, and you go, aha, I have more control over my choices. Mm-hmm. I know there's a difference in my learning and my experience, and maybe it's even affecting my behavior.
But what do you say to the person, Evelyn, who says, but I'm just not hungry in the morning?
Well, you develop a habit of being hungry in the morning.
How do you do
When you eat breakfast in the morning, then you're more likely to be ready to eat a good lunch and a good supper without that evening snacking. Then if you don't have that evening snacking, then you wake up with a better appetite. And sometimes it's a learned behavior. But if you haven't been eating breakfast for a long time and you've been skipping breakfast for a very long time, you have to develop the habit of feeding your body when it was really designed to be fed. And in the beginning of habit formation, sometimes it's not something that actually, you know, is you feel like you need. But after you've done it for a while, you go, wow, I really do feel better. I'm able to lose weight and reach and maintain my healthful weight better because I'm eating breakfast, because I'm eating high-fiber foods. I don't have those sugar attacks like I used to. And we know that there's less risk of heart disease and diabetes. If there are issues with these chronic diseases, the body needs a good breakfast to start the day off with.
What's so fascinating, Evelyn, is some of these things that were actually very close to the hearts of people throughout Indian country, modern science is really reemphasizing. I can remember reading something, probably only, 130 years ago or so, but some of the descriptions from the late 1800s of how Native Americans ate. And of course, there were differences across tribal lines, but an emphasis was made that they did not eat what we would call a supper. There may have been food available, but traditionally, like many cultures, the bigger meal was earlier in the day. And this is really what you're pointing us to, isn't it?
Yeah, that they had wisdom in doing that, of saying, okay, let's put the fuel in the body before it gets started. You know, we do that with our automobiles,
you
don't
got
we?
It. That's right.
And so you treat the machine like it's supposed to be taken care of. And so you start out with that nice big breakfast that consists of real food and not fabricated food. And then, you know, a few hours later, you have another nice big meal. And a lot of people find that if they have a lighter supper, that they sleep better. And it's a great way to keep blood sugars balanced and to help people to lose weight if you put on a few pounds that you're trying
That's
to get rid of.
If folks want to get this information in another format other than listening to the radio show, you have some resources at Lifestyle Matters. How do people get hold of those?
We do. They can go online to lifestylematters.com.
Okay.
Lifestyle Matters with an S.
Okay.
Lifestylematters.com. And there are many resources. We have DVDs. We have books. We have PowerPoint presentations. We offer resources to all different ages and ethnic groups. And I think that you would find that there would be something that would be of use. We help people of all ages and with chronic diseases and prevention and also in treatment.
Tremendous. I'm talking with Evelyn Kissinger. Evelyn is not going away. We're talking about things that can make a difference in your life. We got a lot more practical insights that can make a difference as far as your health, improving your health, increasing your vitality. Lifestyle Matters is the organization she works with, and a lot more insights coming up. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Did you know 26 million Americans have kidney disease and most don't know it?
The day I was diagnosed, I didn't know what to do. I called the National Kidney Foundation, and the young lady who answered stayed on the phone with me and walked me through step by step. She, too, was surviving kidney disease. And she showed me there could be life after kidney disease.
Visit the National Kidney Foundation at kidney.org. Now you know.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. The venue, Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm in the exhibit hall here of the International ASI Convention 2014. Across from me still is our good fortune to have Evelyn Kissinger. Evelyn, registered dietitian with Lifestyle Matters. We've been speaking about some of the good things you can do by increasing fiber, some of the dangers of a high sugar intake. And Evelyn, as we were speaking a little bit about this topic or these topics at the break, you said, Dr. DeRose, there's another problem with lots of sugar. What is that?
Yes. One of the things that sugar can do, high intakes of sugar, is it throws off your appetite hormones. Your appetite hormones tell you when you're hungry and when you've had enough to eat that it's time to stop eating. And they are the regulators in our body, the leptin and the ghrelin. And when we eat a lot of sugar, it dysregulates. It throws them off. And so we don't really know when we're hungry.
Wow.
And we don't know when we've had enough to eat.
Uh-huh.
And so that's another danger in consuming high amounts of sugar. Also, it trains our taste buds to want things that are super sweet.
Okay.
And so we're always looking for that. And maybe the foods as they come in nature just don't taste quite the same because our taste buds have been skewed. They've been changed.
Mm-hmm.
So as we lower the artificial kinds of sweetening, then it helps us to enjoy healthful foods.
Excellent.
In a better way.
Excellent.
And even the artificial sweeteners can throw off those appetite hormones.
Okay.
As well. So even though it's a diet drink,
uh-huh,
it still can be a factor in throwing off those appetite hormones that say, I'm hungry and I'm full. So moving toward food as it comes in nature, choosing water as your preferred beverage,
okay,
will give you the energy you need. It'll give you the power to make the right choices and help you to enjoy. It's all about changing the taste buds to where we actually enjoy eating those healthful foods,
mm-hmm,
that we look forward to it and that they're satisfying to us.
So if I'm applying correctly the message that I hear from you, Evelyn, it would be something like, instead of reaching for that can of soda pop, reach for an apple. Am I hearing you right?
Yes. Or if you're thirsty, it's just good water.
Mm.
Just drink the water. Mm. Put a little lemon or lime in it if
okay
you want to. But getting used to drinking water. I have talked with numerous people who have kicked the soda habit.
Uh-huh.
And they
totally
have. Totally. And they say, you know, I used to drink soda after soda after soda,
uh-huh,
and I was always tired. I was gaining weight,
huh,
and I'm not feeling good. And maybe they've had, you know, the high blood sugar or high,
mm-hmm,
blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've switched, and they drink water. And they've seen amazing turnaround in their health and their energy, and they actually love water now as their preferred beverage.
Isn't that amazing?
It was a learned decision.
Yeah, I can chime in on that one because that was my experience years ago.
Was it?
Uh-huh. I'm still hung up on one thing, though. I'm in my mind, I'm thinking of this apple next to the soda pop, and I know we're both in agreement. If it's between meals, you're better off sticking with the water. But here's the question that's running through my mind. You help me out with this, Evelyn. I've heard that if a person eats, say, 80 calories of apple, they're less likely to eat so much at the meal that follows. Whereas if they drink 80 calories of the soft drink, they're not as likely to avoid those same calories.
That's
in the meal.
Right.
That is
yeah,
true?
Starting the meal, or if you need something between meals, the apple's the best choice. Mm-hmm. Having those apples and those whole foods at mealtime, that's what's going to fill you up, give you the nutrients you need, give you the energy you need, help reduce the likelihood of chronic disease. And if you have that diabetes and high blood pressure, high cholesterol, it helps in healing the body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's enjoyable.
No, you got it. Well, especially after you develop the enjoyment, if you've lost it, right? Doesn't it happen to some people?
Right. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about diet. I know you're a registered dietitian, but I know you well enough that when you help people to lose weight or control diabetes or deal with their heart disease-related issues, you don't just talk about diet. What else is on the equation?
Well, one of the things that is amazing, especially for blood sugar levels, is exercise.
Okay.
And if there is a And this is a simple but profound truth. Taking a 10-minute walk after meals can help so much in stabilize or helping to regulate blood sugar levels. Mm. Blood sugar levels, if a person is out there with diabetes or insulin resistance or heart disease, mm-hmm. we want to eat healthy foods. We want to eat those fiber
right,
foods
right.
at regular times. But the other magic is taking a 10-minute walk after every meal.
Okay.
It's very simple, but it is an amazing helping keep blood sugars stable.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get in, a lot of people, you know, are looking at pedometers and walking 10,000 steps a day.
Okay.
You know, they're trying to get up to that.
That's
you know,
a lot of
walking. That's 5 miles a day.
Uh-huh.
But I'm sure the Native American people know all about being active and mm-hmm. walking. Trying to get in at least a half hour of some type of activity during the day. It helps boost the energy level. It is what is very profound about exercise is that it actually helps to make new brain cells.
New brain cells.
Brain cells are born in the amygdala and dentate gyrus of the brain when we exercise.
Hmm.
And that probably inspires me to exercise more than anything I know.
Okay.
Is that new, you know, we learned when we were in college that you were born with all the brain cells you're going to get and all that's going to happen is they're going to die.
That's what they told us. That's not true?
That's not true. New science has shown that new brain cells are born in your brain when you exercise.
Wow.
And so that is just an amazing mm-hmm, truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helps me to put on those tennis shoes or get out there walking
okay.
every day. And it's also going to give us energy. It even helps to control appetite.
Hmm.
Gets those appetite hormones
uh-huh.
lined up. And people that have been to my classes who haven't exercised in years, I suggest one 10-minute walk a day.
Oh.
That's where you start.
Okay.
You just do that one 10-minute walk a day.
Uh-huh.
Can be any time of the day. The best time to exercise is when you'll do it.
Huh.
Yeah, whenever it will fit in.
Okay.
And if you can connect it with another activity, like go for a 10-minute walk right after a meal,
mm-hmm.
right after lunch, and make that your habit, that is great. Or maybe it's taking that 10-minute walk in the morning. Or maybe it's an evening 10-minute walk, but start out with 10 minutes. And then in a few days you go, maybe I can up that to 15 minutes.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Or maybe I can take 2 10-minute walks a day. And so you gradually increase the time that you're exercising and intensity.
Well, tell me your reaction to this, Evelyn, because I totally agree with you. And I've encouraged my patients, especially those with diabetes over the years, to do a walk after a meal. But because a lot of the patients that I've dealt with have had heart disease or other problems, I've encouraged them to do that post-meal walk at a very low level of intensity.
Yes.
Is that something you
yes.
find important
yes.
too?
Yes. You just go for, it's almost a leisurely walk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you just get out and move.
Excellent.
Just get out and move. And then as you start to get more energy, you feel better, you'll naturally want to move more.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great information. How about the person who said, you know, this was sounding pretty good until she said 10 minutes of exercise. I mean, to someone that may sound like a little, but someone else may say, I'm doing good to do 2 minutes. What do you tell that person?
I had a lady one time in a class. She, instead of timing, she counted her steps.
Okay.
And so she would report how many steps. I did 100 steps after my meal. Uh-huh. Then I did 200 steps. Because she had some chronic disease that was really debilitating to her. But as the class went, this was an 8-week class, and as we, each week she would come back and she would go, I did more and I'm feeling better. Mm. So it's starting out slow and keep working at it. Just keep working at it and you'll see improvements.
So the message I hear you saying loud and clear, Evelyn, is do something.
Just do something.
Okay.
And it'll make a big difference.
The other thing that exercise fascinates me about is just how it impacts another huge problem we have in America, whether we're talking to people in Indian country or any other demographic area. It's this whole area of sleep and sleeplessness.
Yes.
Do you find in your experience that folks you work with in your classes are having challenges with sleep?
Yes, they are. We have so many devices and things that keep us awake, or we have a to-do list that just is just too long. And we think that sleep is like fluff. It's nice if I get enough sleep. And people get praised for not getting sleep,
but
working so hard and not getting sleep.
Yeah.
But the body and the brain, especially the brain, needs time to sleep. It's going to, and this is the best first step if you're trying to reach and maintain your healthful weight, is getting enough sleep. Because if you don't get enough sleep, when you wake up in the morning, your physiology has changed. Your cortisol, your stress hormones are higher, and your blood sugar levels can be higher, and that sets the stage for wanting sugar.
Okay.
You start to want to you start craving sugar, and it's harder to stay on the path of eating healthful foods when you have this strong craving. So getting enough sleep is major when it comes to recovering from chronic disease or prevention. It's important for kids to get enough sleep so that their brain is ready for learning. And as I taught at a university, I would tell my students, make sure you get enough sleep tonight so that your brain will remember everything you learned today.
That's interesting.
Because
isn't
it? Your short-term memory goes into long-term memory as you sleep. You spend all that time studying. You want to remember that stuff.
That's right.
And so when you go to bed at night on time, and you get a sufficient sleep, then you're going to be able to hold on to that information and remember it. And don't we all want better memories?
No, you're right. This is a powerful message, Evelyn. I hate to admit it, but when I started college, I didn't understand this physiology. And more than once, I was guilty of staying up very late, preparing for a test. You may have gathered, you know, ultimately becoming a physician. I did well on those tests, but I found, just like you're saying, if I was cutting myself short on sleep, I may have gotten an A on the test, but 2 weeks later, if someone asked me a question from that class, I didn't know what the answer was. So getting sleep, and one of the things that can help us get better sleep is exercise.
Exercise, eating healthy foods, those things help us to get enough sleep. And also creating some kind of a pattern so that we can slow down. When it's time to slow down, sometimes we will miss that opportunity of when our body is trying to slow down, and we kick in with an activity or a TV program, and we wake ourselves up, and then we don't feel so sleepy. But being in tune to when the body is ready to start to slow down and having some kind of a routine is very important.
Tremendous, Evelyn. One more time, how do people get a hold of Lifestyle Matters?
LifestyleMatters.com.
Great. Great information. I know you have to leave, but we've got someone else, another expert from Lifestyle Matters from the team, going to join us in our next segment. Don't you go away. I'm Dr. David DeRose. You're listening to American Indian Living. Some more great information. We'll be right back. You stay tuned.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom.
I go to school with your children.
We say the Pledge of Allegiance together.
You see me around the neighborhood and you tell me that I'm a pretty good kid.
Well, I'm one out of every 5 children in America and I'm struggling with hunger.
This problem is closer than you think. My teacher tells me we could grow up to be whatever we want.
I want to grow up to be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry.
There's enough food in this country to feed everybody.
Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help.
Every dollar you donate helps provide 8 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger.
Together, we are Feeding America, brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. Dr. David DeRose, I'm recording here in this wonderful venue. I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're at the International ASI Conference 2014. I so enjoyed having Evelyn Kissinger in our virtual studio, and now I actually have the director of Lifestyle Matters sitting across from me, Vicki Griffin. Great to have you, Vicki.
Thank you so much, Dr. DeRose.
Vicki, you and I have rubbed shoulders over the years. I've enjoyed your materials. By the way, you've been very gracious and sharing a lot of your work with me, helping me in my health education efforts over the years. But we've got a big task. I mean, Evelyn's been telling us a lot of the things that many people have perhaps heard before, how we need to eat less sugar, more fiber.
Right.
We need to do better with exercise. Here's the question. A lot of people say, I know all that, but I'm just not having much success. What do you tell them?
What I tell them is that the battle is not for the bulge. It's for the brain. And it's not about weight control. It's about appetite control. And that's a brain thing. So there are battles that we have to fight on 5 fronts. And I know these battles personally. I know them well. I was not raised with a healthy lifestyle. I was a runaway. I started running away from home when I was 5.
Wow.
Spent many years in trouble, many, many years having many problems. And so the addicted brain is not the addicted brain is fighting very hard. But we need to learn how to fight smart. And whether it's diabetes, whether it's an addiction to pornography or drugs or alcohol, the addicted brain has a profile. And so we've got to learn how to fight that battle on 5 different fronts.
Mm.
There's the battle of the environment. The environment is what surrounds you. And it's your internal environment of how you think. That's one great battlefront.
Mm-hmm.
There's the battle of culture. And that's what pressures you. Whether
wow.
that pressure is your tribe, whether it's your workplace, whether it's your family, whatever that culture is, it pressures you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's the battle of your biology, and that's what changes you. There's the battle for your brain, and that's what drives you. And then there's that spiritual battle, and that's who leads you. So we've got to learn how to not only fight hard, but fight smart in every one of those areas. And some people have
a huge fight in one area mm-hmm. and not so much in the other. Mm-hmm. But we've got to identify those battle areas and learn how to watch and be vigilant and win. And I'll tell you what, in every single one of those categories, it takes time and perseverance to gain success. There are no shortcuts.
So what are some practical pointers that someone can apply? I know the battle is different for every person, but let's talk about the environment.
Let's talk about your internal environment. That's one that we ignore because the way you think is going to drive what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And we do not deal with the way we think. We have habits of thinking, and 60% of what we do is automatic. And it has been said that attitude is the librarian of your past, it's the spokesperson of your present, and it's the prophet of your future, and that is true. And a bad attitude is like a flat tire. You're not going to get anywhere until you change it. And so with that in mind, one of the first things that we address when we're running any kind of lifestyle seminar, we address the fixed versus the learning mindset. When people get a hold of this, then they get the tools to grow in every single area of weakness. They learn how to develop the mental metal to move forward in the face of setbacks, obstacles, failures, and problems. And we all want to move forward. Nobody gets up in the morning and says, you know what, I think I'm going to fail at everything I do today. That sounds like a great plan. People want to move forward.
That's right.
But they don't have the tools to do it. It's just that most people haven't learned how to fight and how to think differently.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a statement that I really cling to, and it says that man was originally endowed with a noble character and a well-balanced mind. And we've pretty much lost all of that.
Wow.
We need to get it back, and we need to fight to get it. And so this conflict between the fixed versus the learning mindset is something I think we need to pay attention to. So the fixed mindset is, this is based on research by Dr. Carol Dweck, who wrote a book entitled Mindset.
Mm-hmm.
The fixed mindset basically believes that traits such as intelligence, personality, capabilities are inborn and fixed and unchangeable. Mm. People with a fixed mindset, even toddlers, will always choose, toddlers will choose easy puzzles because they have to continually affirm how smart they are.
Okay.
And so everything in life, every life's defining moments are always about validating and proving that what you have.
Mm-hmm.
A learning mindset knows that although we have certain genetic traits and boundaries and outlines to personality and ability, that everything is changeable and that it can improve. And so children with a learning mindset, they will choose a hard puzzle because failure does not mean that they're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But a fixed mindset views themselves as either smart or dumb. A winner or a loser, success or a failure.
Okay.
And so they find, so when they meet obstacles, they tend to retreat. Other people's success, they find threatening. They're very fragile people. They have very rigid personalities. They're very perfectionistic, very self-critical, and very critical of others.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine trying to move forward in a marriage. Imagine two fixed mindsets marrying. The marriage is supposed to work because it was made in heaven. So if you have to work at it, it means you're stupid or there's a problem or that it's not that there's something deeply flawed. A learning mindset understands that love needs help. A learning mindset means that an F grade means that you have to work harder, get a tutor, develop different study habits, start exercising. So people with fixed mindsets have no recipe for healing, for fixing things. So they tend to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be very brilliant people. They can run companies. But when calamities come, when obstacles and setbacks come, they don't have the means or the recipe for fixing those things. So whether it's a weight loss program or retooling your life if you're facing diabetes or alcoholism, I've had drug addicts come to my program who, when they understand the difference between the fixed and the learning mindset, they just cry and they say, no wonder I can, because I don't know how to deal with mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
When I make a mistake, I give up. But successful people do not give up, they get up. They refuse to be defeated, and that redefines their lives. It's a basic attitude that is a mental discipline. It's not a feeling.
So someone wakes up in the morning tomorrow, and they've got this running through their mind, this mm-hmm. tape from American Indian Living is replaying.
Right.
Vicki Griffin talking about a fixed versus a learning mindset. How does someone know if they've got a fixed mindset?
They're probably thinking about it right now as they're hearing this. So I'm going to illustrate it with a story.
Please do that.
Jennifer Ouellet was a woman who did not believe that girls could do physics. She hated physics. She was afraid of physics. She didn't take physics in college or in high school. She did postdoc work in science. Never took physics. She ended up at the National Institute of Health. One day, she was coming down the stairs, and she noticed, standing over the copy machine, three Nobel laureates trying to figure out what button to push to make a copy. She stood there and quietly enjoyed the moment, and she realized, you know what? This isn't about intelligence. It's about familiarity. She decided to familiarize herself with physics. She wrote a book called Black Bodies and Quantum Cats, Understanding Physics in Everyday Life. It was on the New York Times bestseller list for 5 weeks. I got the book because I hate physics and I don't understand physics. It's an amazing book. And so here we see an example of a woman who decided to familiarize herself with something that she didn't think she could do. She thought she was stupid, but she understood at that moment that it was really about familiarity, desire, and intention. So this is the basic difference between a fixed and a learning mindset. A learner mindset, I'm going to tell you that Jesus Christ manifests the quintessential learning mindset. It's a biblical model. His invitation to you and I is learn of me. So a person that tries to come to God who does not have a learner mindset, the first time that God shows them a mistake in their life or a flaw, they're going to fall to pieces and go back to Winchell's Donuts or the internet or whatever the thing is to give them comfort. But God wants us to be able to face sadness, pain, obstacles, trouble, and here's what he's going to do for you. He is either going to solve your problem so you can enjoy your day and take your bubble bath at night, or he is going to make you strong. And I think option two happens an awful lot more in the Christian life than option one. And so we need to understand that God is in the business of making fixed mindsets into learning mindsets and making them strong.
And so whether someone calls that God's work, whether they say it's a creator, a great spirit, throughout Indian country, people may come with different philosophical backgrounds, right?
Right.
But you see this spiritual principle operating, and it's something that when you give a seminar, regardless of what spiritual background someone comes from, you're sharing that perspective.
It's a principle that is in our being.
That's powerful. Vicki, I don't know how this happens. Every time I get a great guest on the show, the clock always wins. Tell us how to get more of the wisdom that you folks are pulling together there at Lifestyle Matters.
Visit us at lifestylematters.com.
And not only do you have great productions, you've also got a magazine.
Balance Magazine.
And you're the editor, right?
I am.
LifestyleMatters.com. Vicki Griffin, you heard from her colleague Evelyn Kissinger. I'm Dr. David DeRose. I hope you got the message. A lot of those things you've been hearing about for years are true. Decrease the sugar, increase the fiber, exercise. But Vicki's saying if you don't think you can change, that's the problem. There's help for you. Whether you go to Lifestyle Matters or elsewhere, whether you just simply look to the Creator, you can change your lifestyle. For all of us at American Indian Living, I'm Dr. David DeRose wishing you the very best of health.
This is Life Talk Radio.